Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Friday, September 29th, 2017. This episode is coming to you pretty late in the day here on Friday, but it's the second episode for the week, which is progress from where we've been so far in August and September, and hopefully we'll keep growing on that going into next week as the Clippers get into preseason action beginning on Sunday against the Toronto Raptors. So, first of all, I said on Twitter I was going to take some fan questions, and I'm going to not do everything that you guys sent me, but I'm going to do a couple of those, and then I'll move into continuing the player preview series. So, a couple of you guys asked about the rotation, what I expect to see this weekend, who's going to be playing at what position, who's going to be playing a certain amount of minutes. And so this is sort of, you know, kind of stuff that we've talked about maybe in bits and pieces over the course of the summer, but I think that this is an effective way to try to preview the first preseason game, because I've been kind of struggling with it, because, you know, preseason game, you don't really know what to expect, and it really couldn't be any less important as to how well the team plays or if they win or they lose. The game does not matter for any reason. So it's hard to preview key matchups because you don't know who's going to be playing and who's going to be sitting out. But I think by talking about rotations, that might be a good way to sort of get us ready for this first game. Before I get into that, though, I do want to address one question that someone sent me regarding Willie Reed's legal issues. I don't want to ignore this. I don't want to pretend that it's not happening, and I hope that I haven't done that. I think I've at least addressed it on the show whenever it's been in the news. But I will say that I don't know what's going on with Willie Reed's legal issues, and so I don't want to speculate. I don't want to put false information out there. I don't want to create a unfair sort of narrative, whether it's in favor of Willie or against him, before we know all of the details. So I think that for right now, the best thing to do is to wait, which is what I've been doing, basically, to wait and hopefully reserve judgment. I do think that if these domestic violence allegations are founded and accurate, then that's certainly not the kind of person that I enjoy supporting in sports. And I will say that. But I do think that for now, it's best to wait and see what happens with the whole situation. And I'm not a legal expert, and I certainly, you know, this is unpleasant stuff, and I don't really go out of my way to do a ton of research on it because it's not pleasant for me to research, and I'm not really paid well enough to look that much into stuff that I don't want to look into. So when things come out about Willie Reed, we'll talk about it a little more in depth. Until then, I want to stay away from speculation. So now getting into the rotation a little bit briefly, just for a couple minutes, and then in the back half of the show, I'm going to continue with our player preview series that we've been doing for the last couple weeks. So I expect, and this is just speculation, so it's not like I know anything or have any real reason to believe it, but I expect that everyone will play in the Clippers' first preseason game on Sunday. They're in Hawaii. They're doing this whole exhibition. It's outreach. So I'm not sure that it's good form to rest their star players. I think you know, the Clippers, part of this sort of Hawaii training camp fan fest experience is they're trying to tap the Hawaii market and make Hawaii, people in Hawaii, make Hawaiians into Clippers fans because they feel like Hawaii is a market that isn't really tapped in the NBA. So they're trying to make Hawaiians Clippers fans. And I think that you don't necessarily serve that purpose if you sit Blake Griffin out for both of these games. I think you want these Hawaiian fans to be able to go out and actually see these guys play. Now, I don't think they're going to play a lot. I mean, it is preseason. You don't normally see guys break much above the low to mid-20s in the preseasons unless there's maybe one game where the team plays its normal rotation or plays someone big minutes to get them conditioned. So I think what we'll see in this first game is a really healthy mix of lineups. And then probably going into the season, what we'll see is some of the second unit guys' minutes scaled back a little bit compared to preseason and the starters ratcheted up. So, for example, we might see at a position like, shooting guard, we might see Austin Rivers start and play 24 minutes. We might see Lou Williams come off the bench and play 24 minutes. In the regular season, it might shift a little bit. Austin might be playing more 30 or 32. Lou Williams might be down in the 16 to 18 range. It could also depend on matchups and how it goes. But, I mean, that's just an example. I think maybe the guard rotation could fluctuate a little bit more. But, like, at power forward, a lot of guys are going to get chances at power forward in the preseason. We talked in the last episode about how many options the Clippers have there. From Blake Griffin, obviously, who will be the starter, to Montrezl Harrell and Bryce Johnson. And then both small forwards, Daniel Gallinari and Sam Decker, being able to slide over. The fact that you don't have to play Blake Griffin 36 minutes in the preseason like you're going to have to do in the regular season gives you a lot of flexibility to use those power forward minutes in the preseason to experiment with different lineups. Gallinari and Decker playing together, Montrezl Harrell in the game, Bryce Johnson in the game, maybe play a three-guard lineup with Gallinari at power forward. So you get a lot of different, you could get a lot of different looks. So that's what I'm looking for. I don't think at this stage in the game we're going to be seeing a lot of three-guard lineup, which is probably a good thing. I think that there will probably be times where Doc Rivers will turn to the three-guard lineup, especially because, I think the three guys are probably going to be Beverly, Rivers, and Lou Williams that Doc can just lean on as a crutch, because we know that Patrick Beverly is going to be, the alpha dog in the guard rotation. We know that Doc can rely on Austin. He's been with the team for several years. And I think that we'll get to a point where if the team is having some offensive struggles, Doc will go with Lou, move Austin over to small forward, which we saw him do at times last season, so that you can have Lou Williams out there bringing kind of an extra offensive punch. I don't think they'll need it as often as they've needed it in the past, because they have, in Daniel Gallinari, a really potent offensive threat at small forward, which obviously they haven't had in past seasons with guys like Matt Barnes, Luke Mbamute, Wesley Johnson, who might be able to hit an open shot but aren't really offensive creators. I think that that's something that we'll see over the course of the season, these three-guard lineups in certain situations, but I don't think it's something that Doc is necessarily going to rely on, and so I expect, just in terms of rotations, that we'll see at point guard and shooting guard really just a healthy mix of those four main guys, being Patrick Beverly, Austin Rivers, Milos Teodosic, and Lou Williams. And then probably because it's preseason, we'll see sprinklings of the rookies, Sindarius Thornwell, Juwan Evans, and some of the training camp guys. At the forward positions, I think, again, it's pretty clear-cut that the four guys in the rotation will be Gallinari, Decker, Blake Griffin, and Montrezl Harrell. But because it's preseason, we'll see sprinklings of Jameel Wilson, Wesley Johnson, Bryce Johnson. And then at center, it's clearly DeAndre Jordan and Willie Reed. We could see some Montrezl Harrell minutes at center in the preseason, especially if DeAndre's minutes are being kept down. But those are really going to be the centers throughout the season, DeAndre and Willie Reed, with Montrez being like the third string, in case of emergency center.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Now, I'm going to shift away from reader questions. I hope that that just gives you a little bit of an anticipation of what you might see in tonight. In Sunday night's opening preseason game. But now I'm going to go and look at player previews a little bit with a couple of the pieces that we had to close out the week on ClipsNation.com, where we are going player by player through the Clippers roster, previewing everyone's season, looking at what we can expect from them, looking at the role that they're going to play, looking at their long-term standing with the team. It's a really sort of in-depth, case-by-case analysis of these guys. So I don't know that there's really a much better way to preview the season. Of course, we will have a big season preview about the team and what the team's expectations are, but I think that it really adds a lot of value to look case by case at, you know, in this case, the 14 guys on the roster plus Jameel Wilson on a two-way, case by case at these 15 guys and see, you know, exactly what the specific roles and expectations are for each of them. So I'm going to start with Milos Teodosic, whose preview came out today. And I think that he's probably the most interesting Clipper this year. And I think it's almost by default because he's coming over from Europe and he's the only guy who figures to be a serious piece of the rotation who we haven't seen in NBA competition yet. We've seen him against NBA level competition. We've seen him play against Team USA in the Olympics. We've seen him play in an exhibition game against the Minnesota Timberwolves a few years ago. But ultimately, I think it's fair to say that we don't know how he's going to play over the course of 82 games on an NBA team against other NBA teams. We know that he's a weak defender overall, but we don't know if he's mediocre or whatever, but fine for a backup, or if he's like truly horrible defensively. And I think a lot of that is just going to depend on how his game translates to the NBA. We know that he's a tremendous passer. Patrick Beverley, who played with him in Europe before Beverley came over to the NBA a few years ago, said when the Clippers signed Teodosic this summer, Teodosic is the best passer in the world. The Clippers just signed the best passer in the NBA. That's what he said. And, you know, looking at the video, it doesn't seem to be really that outlandish of a statement. I mean, these passes he throws, the vision, the spin, the pace on some of them to fit them through tiny windows is spectacular. But the question is, when you get to the NBA level and the guy guarding you is quicker and smarter and better and has longer arms to deflect passes and get and close off lanes, and when everyone on the defensive side has better awareness, and not to say, you know, I don't want to make it a whole European basketball versus NBA basketball thing, but the NBA is the highest level of competition. So you're playing against better defenses, even if stylistically they're different. Longer arms, better athletes who are more capable of getting deflections. And so those passing lanes just aren't as open. Now, I don't think Milos Teodosic has an especially low floor in the NBA. I think he'll be a fine role player, if only because it's hard to project him as being worse than, say, Jose Calderon, who's a solid ball handler, you know, makes decent passes as a lead guard, hits good shots, and is pretty poor defensively. It's hard to see Milos being worse than a Jose Calderon, and Jose Calderon is fairly solid. Now, Milos has a lot of upside, and I think he doesn't have a very low floor, and I think he does have a particularly high ceiling, where if we really see a translation of his game from Europe to the NBA, or if we even see an improvement, which even though it's somewhat counterintuitive, is possible with guards in some cases because the NBA has that longer three-point line, which can open up the floor, open up spacing, and allow, you know, Chris Paul is a guy who actually who said that he thinks he's a better NBA player than he was a college player because there's more space in the NBA. The three-point line is farther away, and you're playing with better shooters on your team. So it's possible that Milos Teodosic comes into this situation where there's more space on the court because it's spaced out, and because opposing defenses are paying more attention to guys like Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari than they would have normally been paying to Milos' teammates in Europe, then he might have more opportunity. And maybe the ball swings to him on the weak side, and he has way more room to pass than he did in Europe because in Europe he was always on the ball. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think that he does have a lot of upside. I think he has literally rookie of the year upside, even though he's 30 years old. He technically is an NBA rookie. So I'm really excited for him, but led off this segment with, I think he's one of the hardest guys to place because we just don't know how his game is going to translate. Sam Dekker, Montrezl Harrell, the two guys I'm about to talk about, they've both played a full rotation season in the NBA. We know who they are. Now they could take steps upward and they could fall off a cliff, and guys do that. But we have a pretty good sense of who everyone else on the roster is, except Milos Teodosic. And I think that the translation this year is going to be really, really fascinating to see. Like I said, I think that there is, you know, if he turns into Jose Calderon, it'll be disappointing, but he'll still be rotation caliber. But I think there really is the potential for something special here. Now I'm going to shift over to the last two guys I'm going to talk about in this episode, Sam Dekker and Montrezl Harrell, who are two of the guys who came over in that massive Chris Paul trade with the Houston Rockets, where the Clippers got like 87 players and 43 draft picks or something along those lines. Now, I think Sam Dekker is the more exciting of these two prospects and maybe the most exciting bench player that the Clippers have long term, if only because Lou Williams is 30 years old on expiring contract, Willie Reed is 28 years old, he's on a one-year contract. But I think that Sam Dekker is a guy who potentially, I've liked his game ever since he was at Wisconsin, and I feel like he has a chance to maybe not grow into an NBA level starter, but grow into a really valuable backup combo forward. Now, one drawback with Dekker is that he wasn't an especially great three-point shooter last season. If memory serves, he was about 32%. But you start breaking down the splits and you look at his injury log, and you see that he shot the ball much better, and then he had a wrist injury and he went through a slump, and then as he started to get better, he started to make more again. There was definitely some inconsistency there that isn't fully accounted for by that wrist injury, but the wrist injury contributed to the low percentage. But he's a guy who you think, because of how he was as a shooter in college, because he's shown that he can get hot in the NBA, he's maybe a guy who could develop into a really, really lethal shooter as his career goes on. And if you get and he's an athlete, like he's an insane athlete. He runs the floor, he makes great backdoor cuts, he can finish lobs, he dunks every single ball that he gets in the lane. He dunks. He's tall, he's got long arms. He's not an especially great defender, which is why Houston had him pegged more as a backup power forward than a backup small forward. His perimeter defense definitely leaves something to be desired. But I think that if he can get that shot down, he doesn't have to be necessarily a great defender to be a really, really valuable long-term backup combo forward, because the Clippers can use him, you know, maybe not this year with how their roster is constructed, where they don't have a lot of options at small forward and they seem to have a glut at power forward. But you start talking about a guy like Sam Dekker, who's fairly young. I mean, he's only 23 years old. So you start talking about a guy like that who could be on the team for 5, 6, 7, 8 more years. And this is a guy who could really bring value in this small forward slash power forward role for a long time. So I'm looking for a big season from Dekker. Maybe not that he breaks out and proves that he should be a starter, especially because he's behind Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari. But I would like to see him emerge as kind of like a sixth man, where the guard rotation for the Clippers this year is kind of unique. I've said, you know, I've used the word ensemble before, and you don't often see that in the NBA. You might see a position that's ensemble, where you've got like three different guys playing 16 minutes a game at the position, but it's not especially common to see like a guard unit that's four guys, all that are pretty much interchangeable. And I think that'll be more or less the case for the Clippers this season. I think at center, you've got a clear 1-2 with DeAndre and Willie Reed. But then I think at the forward positions, there's a chance for Sam Dekker to emerge as the true sixth man, backing up both power forward and small forward positions, getting up into the 20s, you know, 20, 24 minutes per game, where conventional wisdom would say Gallinari might play, you know, 32 minutes a game. That leaves 16 for Sam Dekker. If he has a good season, he's going to start poaching some of those backup power forward minutes as well. And I think that that could be, or maybe poaching additional small forward minutes and the Clippers play lineups with him next to Gallinari, in which case the two are sort of interchangeable at small forward and power forward when Blake Griffin is on the bench. Kind of transitioning from that in the same vein, I think that this is going to be a really, really interesting year for Montrezl Harrell. And I think that Montrezl Harrell has a lot on the line this year, because we talked earlier this week about Willie Reed and how Willie Reed is simply a better player than Montrezl Harrell right now, and he's a better player than Bryce Johnson right now, and Willie Reed automatically becomes the backup to DeAndre Jordan. There was some speculation before the Clippers signed Reed late in the free agency period that Montrezl Harrell would be the backup center, and the backup power forward position would sort of rotate between Gallinari and Dekker playing small ball minutes, and Bryce Johnson, who didn't get much of a chance in his rookie season because of that back injury. Now it's more looking like Willie Reed seems pretty squarely at the top of the totem pole at backup center, although things can change, like we saw a couple seasons ago with Josh Smith and Lance Stephenson being usurped by Pablo Prigioni and Cole Aldrich in the second unit. But right now, going into the season, it seems like Willie Reed should have a pretty square advantage at backup center. That means Montrez is now competing for backup power forward minutes, where he's a questionable fit in a lineup next to Willie Reed, and he has a lot of competition from Gallinari and Decker bleeding over into power forward minutes, like I mentioned. The fact that there aren't very many power forward minutes available to begin with, because you're playing behind Blake Griffin, who's going to have to step into an even bigger role for the Clippers this season. And then some pressure from behind with guys like Wesley Johnson, who I don't think is especially a viable option, but he's got some experience with the team. He knows the system. Doc maybe feels like he can trust Wesley a little more than other guys, even though hopefully other guys are good enough that Doc doesn't have to feel like... I mean, this is the thing with Paul Pierce in the last couple of years. I don't think that Doc ever thought Paul is good or Paul is better than these other guys, but I do think he thought that all of his options at a given position were so bad that he would at least play the guy who he could trust to be smart on the floor and kind of be a leader and not make major mistakes, and then hopefully just make up for a loss at that position with gains at other positions. Now, I'm not saying that that was an effective strategy or that it's what I would have done, but I think that was sort of his line of thought, where when people are asking, why isn't Wesley Johnson playing over Paul Pierce? Because I think Doc thought that even though Paul Pierce was bad and possibly worse than Wesley Johnson, Wesley was a little more unpredictable. And Paul, he just felt, was a little more stable. And if you don't have any good options, you might as well have a stable bad one. Again, I'm not saying I agree with it, but I think that's where he was going. So if we see the Clippers reach a point this season where you've got a position, you know, maybe there's a couple injuries, a couple guys are playing really badly, I wouldn't be surprised to see Doc turn to Wesley Johnson, even if Wesley isn't playing that well, just because he's a little more stable. He's been with the team for a couple of years. He knows the system. He knows Blake and DeAndre and Austin. He's played with these guys. And then also, you know, Wesley Johnson, I was speaking about in terms of pressure from lower on the depth chart on Montrezl Harrell. That pressure is also coming from Bryce Johnson, who we talked about earlier this week going into his option years in his rookie deal, trying to basically prove to the Clippers, like I said, you know, in the last show, I think they will pick up his third-year option coming up before, you know, they've got to pick up the option before the beginning of his second season. They have to pick up the option on his third year. I think they'll do that. But if he can't show them something this season, then it's going to be really interesting what they do with his fourth-year option before next season starts. And so Bryce has a lot of incentive to really push himself and try to push past Montrez or Willie into that rotation. So there's a lot of pressure on Montrez, and there's not a lot of minutes available, and he's in a position where the Clippers are going to have to decide his long-term future as the team that, you know, has his rights. But you've got a guy here, again, another guy with this kind of young second unit for the Clippers who's only 23 years old. He's only been in the NBA for a couple seasons, and next summer he's going to be a restricted free agent, and the Clippers are going to have his bird rights, and a lot is going to depend on how they see him. If he's unable to earn minutes in competition against, you know, got Willie Reed, Bryce Johnson, Sam Decker sliding over to power forward, Wesley Johnson, it's hard to see the Clippers being willing to commit, you know, any real amount of long-term investment to him in restricted free agency next summer. And as we've seen with the way that the NBA marketplace is shaping up, restricted free agents don't have very much value unless they're the big time ones that are going to get max contract offers from teams like Brooklyn. But other guys haven't been getting great restricted free agency offers. And so the Clippers are in a position where if Montrez has a good season, they could potentially lock up a really solid second unit player for 3 or 4 years at a really, really great rate. Maybe $4, $5, $6 million a season. But if he really underperforms, you probably don't want to give a 3-year, $18 million contract to a guy that you're unsure of. I mean, the Clippers just made that mistake with Wesley Johnson, and they're still paying for it. So it's kind of a make-or-break deal for Montrez. I'm not saying that if he has a bad season, he'll be out of the league. But I think if he has a good season, he has a chance to kind of earn himself a good payday, which obviously all NBA contracts are good paydays, but he's been a minimum salary player through his first 3 seasons, with this upcoming one being his third. He has a chance to earn himself a nice 3 or 4 year deal with a nice payday where he'll get a chance to be a rotation player for 3 or 4 seasons and establish himself as an NBA guy. Then he'll hit free agency again at 26 or 27 or 28, and he'll be in a much more comfortable position. But right now, I don't think his work is done as sort of proving himself. He didn't get a lot of playing time with Houston. He did play backup minutes for the better part of last season because they had some injuries, but I don't think that people are going to be lining up next summer to give Montrez a ton of money or maybe even to give him a guaranteed contract based on what he did for Houston in 2017, unless he can do something not great, but at least replicate that 2017 Houston performance for the Clippers in 2018. I think his path was a lot easier before the Clippers signed Willie Reed, because before Willie Reed was around, Montrez was the clear-cut third big, backing up power forward and center, definitely above Bryce on the depth chart, feeling pretty comfortable. With Willie Reed in, Montrez is now the fourth big, which puts him in a little more precarious position. Guys from all sides pressuring him for minutes, not a lot of minutes to begin with because of Blake Griffin. So it's going to be really interesting. I think the pressure's on Montrez. You know, obviously there's always pressure on in a contract year, but because of the way his career is going and because of the competition he'll have for minutes, there's a lot of pressure on him this season. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I encourage you guys to watch the Clippers' first preseason game on Sunday. It's on NBA TV. Make sure that you check out the Clips Nation blog, www.clipsnation.com. All the game coverage on there. We're going to be continuing our player preview series. We've got some fun little tidbits from training camp that came out this week. And into next week, we'll be back with more episodes of the Locked On Clippers podcast. And we will have all the more coverage on Clips Nation going through the preseason and into the regular season in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening, guys. I almost forgot. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, hit me up on Twitter at LucasJahan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. And make sure to follow Clips Nation on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.